This is the story, the curious story of the mashed grapes, which led to one of the greatest boons to mankind ever invented. And you'll hear another story, the amazing story of the youngest explorer in the history of the world. This is the story. The pendulum of the old clock that stood in the corner of the workshop measured the minutes and the hours with a slow, even beat. While across the cluttered room, the owner of the shop, his head resting on a table, slept soundly. The candle at his elbow had long since burned itself out. But now, gloom of the workshop began to melt as the fingers of the morning sun tugged at the shutters. The clock struck 5 times, announcing the hour with an authoritative voice. The man at the table lifted his head and blinked sleepily. He yawned and mumbled,
"I must have fallen asleep."
But his behavior, the fact that he had slept the night in his workshop, did not surprise him. He had done that often of late, working at night over his plans and designs until he could no longer hold his head up. It was, as his wife repeatedly told him, ruining his health. And to what end? He smiled bitterly. Was he one pfennig richer for having worked so hard? No. For all his hard work, he was penniless and in debt, owing 800 guilders that was to be paid back to Herr Dritzen, the winemaker, that very day. But even that would not have mattered so much if he were one whit closer to his goal. But he wasn't. The invention which he had spent years perfecting was useless unless he could make a machine to go with it. Without a machine, his invention was just so many blocks of wood. But he was no closer to having the right kind of a machine than he had been months before. He was, the man concluded as he stepped to the windows and threw open the shutters, a failure. And with that dark thought preying on his mind, the sun that was admitted to the workshop, as the squeaky shutter swung back, failed to either warm or cheer him. And as he stood there at the window looking out on the sun-bathed streets of Strasbourg, Germany, that summer's morning in 1441, the man uttered a sigh of despair and told himself,
Today I must see Herr Dritzen about the 800 guilders I owe him.
And so without waiting to bid his wife good morning or partake of a scanty breakfast, he trekked through the streets of Strasbourg to the wine house that was owned by his creditor. As industrious as he was generous, Herr Dritzen was hard at work crushing grapes for his wine when the man arrived, but he sat down with his visitor to talk and inquired about the progress of his work. The other man shook his head sadly and replied,
I cannot find the machine to make my invention work. I have failed.
And then, as Herr Dritzen expected, his visitor told him that he could not repay the 800 guilders that he owed. So, there was nothing for the winemaker to do but be generous. He would give the inventor a little more time. When did he think he could pay? Herr Dritzen asked. And the other man replied bleakly,
Never.
Never? Herr Dritzen could not help being shocked by the answer. As magnanimous as he was, the winemaker did not have 800 guilders merely to throw away. And when he had explained this to his friend, the disappointed inventor offered a solution.
Perhaps I could work for you and pay you back that way.
It wasn't the best arrangement in the world for Herr Dritzen. He would have preferred to receive his 800 guilders in cash than in his friend's labor, but he had no choice. And so the inventor started to work immediately. It was not hard work the inventor was given to do, but it was monotonous. A box with holes in the bottom was filled with grapes, and then it was placed on the grape press, which was nothing but a flat board that was screwed down on the grapes. As the grapes were mashed, the juice ran out through the holes in the bottom of the box and into a bucket. For hours, the man worked mechanically, thoughtlessly, squeezing box after box of grapes from which Herr Dritzen made his delicious wines. And then suddenly he stopped dead still in the middle of his labor. He stepped back, eyed the machine with which he'd been working, and muttered,
That's it! Yeah, that's it!
He whirled and excitedly called,
Herr Dritzen! Herr Dritzen! I am quitting this job!
And then, without another word, he dashed from the shop and ran through the streets of Strasbourg to his home. A few moments later, his wife heard such hammering and pounding as had never come from her husband's workshop before. And the racket continued for several days, until finally, the man laid aside his tools and admired the product of his labor.
There! It is finished!
He summoned Herr Dritzen to his workshop, for it was only right that his creditor should be the first to witness his success. But when the winemaker saw the machine his friend had constructed following his precipitous flight from the winery, he couldn't understand it. Had the inventor decided to become Herr Dritzhn's competitor? It would seem so, for what was the thing that stood before him if it wasn't a grape press? The winemaker's friend smiled and replied,
"No, Herr Dritzhn, I am not going to become a winemaker. No, this is a press, all right, but not a press for crushing grapes."
Well, then if it was not that, what was it? And the inventor explained that this was the machine he had been seeking for years. Yes, because this man attempted to pay off a debt of 800 guilders working in a winery, he discovered a machine which, beyond a doubt, did more to change the face of the world than any one thing in history. The inventor's name? Johann Gutenberg. And the machine he discovered while mashing grapes? The printing press. This is the story. The sheriff of the little town of Winchester, Virginia, had just settled down in his office for a game of checkers with one of his deputies that summer's evening when the telephone rang. The sheriff grunted disgustedly. He didn't take much stock in the newfangled gadget which he called a telephone, and he liked it even less when it disturbed his checker games. But he couldn't ignore it, so he waddled into the next room and over to the wall on which it was attached and lifted the receiver.
Sheriff talking.
And while the police officer listened, the urgent voice of a man at the other end of the line demanded that he come immediately and told him the nature of the trouble. The sheriff replied,
"All right, mister, I'll be there in a few minutes."
He put the receiver back on its hook and called to his deputy,
"Put the checkers away, John. We got to go out and find some kid that's left home this morning and ain't showed up yet."
At the home of the lost child, the sheriff found two distraught parents. Between them, they told the circumstances surrounding their 11-year-old son's disappearance, though, as they themselves admitted, there wasn't much to tell. The mother hadn't seen the child since breakfast, but she hadn't worried when he didn't appear for lunch because he often had the noonday meal at the home of one of his playmates. It wasn't until dinner time, and after that, when the parents had become really worried, and the father had stepped into the lad's room to see if there was any clue to his whereabouts. And that's when a very strange thing had been uncovered.
What do you mean, strange?
The sheriff slid forward to the edge of his chair as he asked the question. The boy's father answered, wherever his son had gone, he had apparently taken all his winter clothes with him.
His winter clothes, huh? What would a boy be wearing winter clothes in the middle of summer for? Oh, well, when we find the boy, we'll find the answer.
It was 9 o'clock in the evening when the sheriff and his deputy commenced their search. By midnight, the news of the child's disappearance had spread throughout the community. And reinforced by neighbors of the lad's parents, the searching party had grown until it numbered several score men. But though they scoured the countryside the rest of the night, not a single trace of the boy was found. And as the first light of dawn stole across the Virginia sky, the sheriff decided,
maybe bloodhounds will do the trick.
And so a pack of nervous, whining, sniffing canines were enlisted in the hunt. But by noon, it was obvious that the animals were going to be no more successful than the other searchers. The boy had disappeared as completely as if the earth had opened up and swallowed him. By mid-morning, the searching party had grown into a small army, and the sheriff had wearily climbed into his buggy to return to his office. He could better direct the many men under his command from there. With his equally tired and footsore deputy beside him on the seat of the buggy, the sheriff drove over a little used back road toward Winchester. And it was on that road that the search came to an end.
Whoa, hold up there. Look, John, there's the lad. There he is, coming down the road.
Yes, there he was, trudging down the road in the middle of the summer, dressed in his winter coat, his winter hat, his winter boots, and his mittens. When he came alongside the buggy, the sheriff said,
your ma and pa are looking for you, son. You better come with me.
But the boy shook his head. He was sorry, he said, but he couldn't go with the sheriff. For the sheriff was heading in the wrong direction.
I am, huh? And where exactly are you going, son?
And the boy replied without a moment's hesitation, for he knew exactly where he was going. He was going to discover the North Pole.
So that's why you've dressed up in your winter duds, huh? Whatever gave you the idea you were going to discover the North Pole?
And once again, the wandering youth had a ready reply. In a book he had found in his father's library, he had read a note scribbled by his grandmother years before, a note in which she had predicted that a member of her family would discover the North Pole. And the amazed sheriff replied,
well, son, maybe you will someday.
Maybe you will.
But he never did. No, the strange prediction made by the boy's grandmother never came true. For 10 years later, while the youth was a midshipman at Annapolis, another man, Robert Edwin Perry, became the first in history to reach the North Pole. And in his disappointment, the young man probably wondered what great things there were left for him to do, little suspecting, perhaps, that he was destined to be the first man to fly not only over the North Pole, but the South Pole as well. For the 11-year-old boy who ran away from home to fulfill his grandmother's prediction became the most renowned and daring explorer in modern history, a world-famous flyer and pioneer of aviation, the first man to probe the frozen wastes of the Antarctic, Admiral Richard E. Byrd. This is the story.